Valentine's Day has passed. We hope all you lovebirds had a good time. Us, New York, expecting another 8 inches of snow. Hunker down, grab a drink, join the Wrestling Guys' latest episode, and that starts right now. All right, coming to you from the forgotten borough of Staten Island, New York, this is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the podcast on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris Never Miss, a.k.a. the colossal Chris and Reed. But you know we're not talking about anything at all until we get our beautiful socially distant clink. Hope everyone's doing well. Hope you're not snowed in. But like I said, I have three different forecasts on the menu here. We're talking 3 to 5, 8 to 10, and then a little snow with a little mix of freezing rain. So who knows? Who knows what we're getting? As of this recording, we don't know yet. So
yeah, we have no idea. We could wake up to, like you said, and any amount, but we won't know until tomorrow. And you know, hopefully, it won't be that bad. And you know, if you are stuck in your house, just I hope you got enough food and drink to last you through the day, and just hope everybody's staying safe.
I'll tell you this, and I said it last episode too. There's nothing more I hate than snow and the winter. It's terrible. There's nothing good about it. You know, shoveling, yeah, great. You have a snowball fight, make a snowman, and then it just becomes absolutely filthy and frozen and gross. And nah, man, I need heat. Sun, sand, beach. That's what I need. Summer, beautiful.
I'm the complete opposite. I understand the snow is annoying. Gross. I like a good, dark, cold day. And as morbid as that may sound, that's just...
Is that also how you feel in your soul? Is that what we're getting at? I got to say, we're going to continue our Elimination Chamber watch-along series, where as of this recording, it is this Sunday coming up. Last week, we gave you the first ever one back in, 2002, Survivor Series. Shawn Michaels and his doo-doo brown pants won and won the World Heavyweight title. This week, we're going to go to what people consider one of the worst pay-per-views ever, one of the worst Elimination Chamber, probably the worst Elimination Chamber ever, and that is the Extreme Elimination Chamber match from ECW's December to Dismember from 2006. We have some good notes for you here. We're gonna take you on a little ride, talk about the history of this revamp and the problems with this pay per view. I do want to touch on real quick, Chris. Did you watch NXT Vengeance Day, and how did you feel and your reaction about the show?
So I did. I thought it was a really good show. I always enjoy NXT takeovers. Each match was entertaining. No title changes, which I kept. You know, if I was putting money on each match, I would have lost a lot of money because I kept betting on the wrong people. Right. I thought that some of the titles would switch. None of them did. I really enjoyed the Finn Balor Pete Dunne match. I thought it was a good, like, old school, just down and dirty, gritty battle between two really of the best in the world, in my opinion. And Finn Balor is right where he belongs in NXT, and Pete Dunne is awesome. So it was really a good card. Of course, the surprise at the end with Adam Cole turning on at least Kyle O'Reilly. I assume that the Undisputed Era is disintegrated at this point, although tonight was the new NXT episode, and I know there was a six-man tag as the main event. It was Finn and Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly against Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, and Oney Lorcan. I don't know what happened in that match, but for all intents and purposes, it looks like Undisputed Era is no more, and I was surprised and not surprised at the same time. I think it was bound to happen, just like any other group that stays together for a long time. I at least thought, like you did, that Undisputed Era will go to the main roster and have a little bit of a run before that happened, but that's not the case. It looks like they're going to stay in NXT, which I think I might prefer. I would rather see Adam Cole and them stay on NXT because I feel like they have more to offer on that brand. But yeah, I mean, overall, great show, a surprise ending to it, and looking forward to what Adam Cole is going to do now that he's a heel again and maybe go after another title.
I mean, I feel like each match in this show got better as the night went on. So, you know, like you started off with the women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Classic Finals. I thought Dakota Kai and Raquel and Gonzalez were going to go over just for the fact that they seem like they're really putting a lot of momentum behind Raquel Gonzalez. I feel like if anybody's going to knock off Io Shirai, it's going to end up being her, you know, and her pinning her at War Games, her beating Rhea Ripley on her way out. And now this, I was just like, it just, the writing was on the wall. They were going to win the finals for me. You know, I love Shotzi a lot, but she's going to be that NXT mainstay for a little bit. She might get called up sooner rather than later, even before Raquel Dakota Kai. It seems like Raquel's getting all that momentum, and I felt like they were going to win. But then let me tell you, the Johnny Gargano-Kushida match was outstanding.
Yeah.
I really, really liked that match. I thought it was just a great match. You know, really, really good spots. You know, each one working a body part. That flying armbar off the top rope that Kushida did at that point. I thought that was the end of the match. You know, I thought it was the right call letting Johnny go over, just because I like the heel turn. I like what they're doing with him. So let him have a little run with it. You know, so often we see Gargano win and lose in the first defense or whatever. And, you know, we went from that to the men's Dusty Tag Team Classic with MSK and the Grizzled Young Veterans. That's where I faltered. I thought the Grizzled Young Vets were going to win, get him into the second final in a row. Yeah. But these guys in MSK are awesome, man. They're tag team moves. And I never watched them in Impact because I just don't watch Impact. They took the ball. They ran with it. They're really putting some momentum, having them debut in the tournament and then win the tournament. If I had to knock it and knock any other match too, the near falls are beginning to get a bit too much in NXT. But in this match, dude, it had you on the edge of your seat. There was several times where it was really, really good. And then Io Shirai, Toni Storm, Mercedes Martinez. I thought Io was definitely going to retain here because, like I said, I think Raquel Gonzalez is in the works to have that win. It ran a little short because apparently, you know, Toni Storm was clearing off the announce table and just collapsed on itself. So there was a spot that they missed there, and Triple H just saying a conference call afterwards that because of that, they had a little improvised sort of match. They had to cut some time off the match, even though it was allocated for more. And dude, let me tell you this. And then, you know, when you think you can't get any better, this Finn Balor and Pete Dunne match, even down to the little nuances, I don't want to get into a whole long diatribe here, but Pete Dunne working the fingers, stomping on them, you know, doing, you know, the joint manipulation like he always does. And then Finn working on the knee of Pete Dunne, you know, old school mat wrestling in the beginning. And then at the end, they had that little touch of brutality at the end, you know, to the point where Finn can't even make the finger guns because his, you know, his fingers are hurting so bad. So he's kind of just, his hands are like in a claw position. Like the fact that Finn sold it like that, what psychology, right? You don't see stuff like that anymore. You know, guys get stomped on and work an arm and then they're, you know, hitting flying clotheslines at the end. You know what I mean? Like you don't see people sell like that. I agree with you. Finn Balor being NXT was the right call. He's the man there. He puts on these great matches. That might have been an instant classic to me. And then you have the Adam Cole turn at the end with Kyle O'Reilly. Listen, never say never on a Undisputed Era running the main roster. That could still happen. They could just bring them all together and act like that never happened. You know, or explain away, whatever you want to do, fine. Kyle O'Reilly showed you what he could do as a singles wrestler, right, without Bobby Fish. Him versus Adam Cole feud could really tear the fucking house down, dude. You know, and that's what I'm looking forward for. I think this Adam Cole, you know, also, you know, why, you know, Finn Balor beat me and took the title away. That was my opportunity. And now you try to get it. You couldn't get the job done. Now I want to get the job done. And these two guys are going to tear shit up. And I think that's really great. I didn't get a chance to watch NXT before we started to record because, you know, I had to do like adult things and get my taxes done, you know, whatever. I'm looking forward to what they do there. I'm looking forward to it. This was a great, great event to cap off Valentine's Day. My wife was great enough and watched it with me, which is awesome. And, you know, I just thought, I like it, man. You're talking about a 5-match card. Each match gets time. You can't get any better. And everybody delivered. That's good for them, you know.
There's always quality with NXT TakeOver, always. So
My only critique is not every match needs to have about 8 or 9 near falls.
False finishes. I agree. Yeah,
you know what I mean? I think they need to cut down. You know, what I did like, especially in the first match, Dakota Kai and Gonzalez against Ember Moon and Shotzi, was there were a lot of near falls, but in the case of Shotzi's about to get pinned, Ember breaks up the pin. Raquel's about to get pinned, Dakota breaks up the pin. You know, there was a lot of those where the tag team partner was interfering. And that makes sense because you want to win. It's the finals, you know. But when you have a Gargano and Kushida, you know, the excitement of the near submission is really good. But then the whole, you know, I hit my finish, 1-2 kick out. Then you hit your finish, 1-2 kick out. And then we hit a super powerful move, 1-2 kick out again. And then I'm going to hit my finisher again. You know, like, then it's like, okay. And I think, you know, as much as I love the Finn Balor Pete Dunne, there were elements in the match where I'm like, dude, I don't need another. When he hit the bitter end, I was like, this got to be it. And he kicked out. I was like, oh, shit. You know, like, let's not start this back and forth. It really didn't get to that point where it was annoying, but it's bordering on, let's settle down a little bit. You know, correct me. I don't know.
No, I was just going to say I agree 100%. A finisher should be a finisher.
Right. You know, and listen, in a top tier match, Rock kicking out of the Stone Cold Stunner and a WrestleMania main event, cool, I'm with it. Right? Yeah. But if that same thing happened 5 matches ago in a one-on-one match between two wrestlers and they're both kicking out of each other's finisher, then that loses significance in the main event, which is the most important match after. I digress. Ad Wrestling Guys PC, how you feel about that stuff? Too many near falls. How do you feel about Vengeance Day? But as we go from something really, really good, we move on to something really, really bad.
So here's the thing that I want to ask you before we dive into this Elimination Chamber match, December to Dismember 2006. And we'll watch it. And maybe it's better to ask when it's over. But I wonder if the match is really bad or if it's just because it's coupled with the poor undercard. Is the whole show overall bad and like the match is good, or is it just from top to bottom this whole thing sucks?
Well, you have a really good tag match to start off.
Right.
And then the stuff gets progressively worse as you go. Right? So the undercard is really bad.
It is. No, I agree.
The Extreme Elimination Chamber match had potential, right? When you hear about it, weapons and everything like that, you're like, oh damn.
Yeah.
Right? The match itself also runs a little short. It's not that great. And all your favorite wrestlers get eliminated in the beginning, right? And you're waiting for Big Show and Bobby Lashley.
Yeah.
And when it gets down, and we'll see this in the match, where the Big Show is literally waiting for Bobby, or is it vice versa? Am I wrong? Is it Big Show waiting for Lashley out of the pod, or Lashley waiting for Big Show to come out of the pod? I think it was Big Show.
I think Big Show's the last guy to come out.
Right. So they're waiting for each other. So by then, everyone's gone. And you're like, I remember watching this. I want to say, was I maybe at your house again watching this? And I remember being like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? This is how they're going to end the match off? Like, I hated it.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact when you read after the fact where, you know, they didn't want to put the belt on Rob Van Dam. Heyman was really, really pushing for CM Punk to get the title. And Big Show was pushing for CM Punk to get the title. And they were like, no, we want to give it to a very green Bobby Lashley. It was like, okay. You know,
and they took Sabu out of it.
Right, they took Sabu out of the match to put in Hardcore Holly, and the fact that this was also a week removed from Survivor Series, like literally a week later, right, with no buildup, no any type of promotion, and then you wanted people to spend $50-$60 in Survivor Series and another $40 the next week for December to Dismember, like all right, like you know it put a bad taste in fans' mouths, and then on top of that, it was bad.
Yeah, right? I mean, the undercard if. To go through the undercard real quick, the first match was Eminem versus the Hardys. Good match, but you're always going to get good matches from those guys. But then you got Matt Stryker versus Balls Mahoney. And no disrespect to any of these performers, but it's just not – they're not appealing matches here. Matt Stryker versus Balls Mahoney. Elijah Burke and Sylvester Turkai versus the FBI. Daivari versus Tommy Dreamer. And then here's probably the weirdest match of the night. Mike Knox and Kelly Kelly versus Kevin Thorne and Ariel. It's like they took these guys and they're like, we need to fill a time slot. So let's throw names in a hat and whoever we pick out is going to wrestle each other tonight in the match. Like that's what it felt like.
Yeah. And not to mention that it felt like an episode of ECW. So you're talking about a pay-per-view that ran short, right? It was allocated 3 hours. It clocked in at 2 hours and 17 minutes, let's say, right?
Yeah.
The Hardy Boys versus Eminem is 22 minutes, 22:33. The Elimination Chamber match is 24 minutes. Every match in between, seven minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, it's short. It's short.
It's super short. Why? Well, the performers weren't up to snuff, but you know what? It's an ECW pay-per-view. You chose to do it and choose to give these guys time. You're talking about the highest rated match was the Hardy Boys and Eminem. That was 3.25 stars, right? Mahoney and Stryker got 0.5. Burke and Takai against the FBI, 1.25. The Daivari and Dreamer match was a dud rating. The intergender match, the tag match, was a -1 star. And then the Extreme Elimination Chamber was 2.5 stars, right? It was also named the worst major show of the year for a reason, right? So my question is, if you're going to have a pay-per-view, have people pay $40, put a tag match with two teams that are not even on the show,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of your sure. actual people, you give them single digit in terms of minutes time, right? Then why have this pay-per-view? Why not just have this Elimination Chamber in an episode of ECW?
Yeah, it's definitely it's a logical question when, you know, from our perspective watching it, it's just like, why did this really have to take place? You know, this could have been something that they could have even added to the next month's pay-per-view, you know, like whatever the pay-per-view was after Survivor Series, Armageddon, I think that year, or whatever it was, just, hey, we're going to have ECW have their title match or our pay-per-view, and it's going to be an Elimination Chamber match, instead of building a pay-per-view for the brand, but the brand isn't strong enough to carry that pay-per-view. Because like you said, it opens up with two tag teams that are from, I think one Raw, one SmackDown. It's like neither one is on ECW. And nobody's really going to complain about watching the Hardys or watching Eminem. Eminem was a really good tag team, but they're not a part of ECW. So it's just like you can feel, if you are a mark, I guess, a smart mark, you know that they're just trying to just fill in here because they don't have anything else to fill it with. And then when you look at the rest of the matches and look who's going against each other, it does feel like a bad episode of ECW from that time.
I mean, let's and now that you said that, because, you know, they have these teams that are not even on the show, it's because they had no build-up. They weren't ready for this pay-per-view. They haven't established no stars yet. So let's rewind a little bit, right? So ECW, the original ECW, effectively dies in 2003, right? What was it
2001?
2001 into 2003 was final, like the final nail in the coffin, right? Heyman's overdoing commentary for a while. He moves on to do the invasion angle. Now he's, you know, Brock Lesnar's advocate and doing all this stuff, okay? The original idea for the revamp of the ECW was Shane McMahon wanted to take the ECW brand and turn it into an online-only show. Right, mm-hmm. Almost a precursor to the WWE Network 24/7, a precursor to streaming. He wanted to turn ECW to an online-only television show with the ECW roster. Before any of that happens, Vince McMahon goes and starts shopping it around, and Sci-Fi Network buys the show. So there goes that idea. And this is one of the nails in terms of Shane's career in WWE wanting to go strike out on his own, right? Because he was trying to do that for a while. He wanted his dad to purchase Pride and try to run that. Then he wanted to do the ECW thing, and each time the rug kind of pulled out from underneath him. And he wanted to just strike out and say, I can make it on my own, more or less. I don't know Shane McMahon on a personal level, but this is what you hear, this is what you read, right? It's under the WWE umbrella now. It's now a relaunch. Now this is WWE ECW, as everybody likes to call it at this point, right? And what do they do in the first episode? They bring out a fucking zombie character because it's the Sci-Fi Network. Do you remember that zombie character?
Not only do I remember, but I also happen to have known that zombie character.
Really?
Yeah, so way back, I actually went to Gleason's gym in Brooklyn, New York, and I gave $1,000 of my own money to train there with Johnny Rods, the WWE Hall of Famer. And a lot of known wrestlers have come out of that camp there, like the Dudleys, Tommy Dreamer, Taz. That guy who played the zombie, Timmy Arson, was there. And I remember he was teaching us how to lock up, and because I had clearly and obviously had no idea what I was really doing, as I was locking up with him, I kept trying to do it for real. Like, it wasn't like I was trying to work it. I was just like, okay, trying to take him down. And he made a comment. He's like, why do you keep trying to take me down? You know, you can't. I was like, I don't know. I have a little story about him. Unfortunately, he's actually passed away years ago. Man. Yeah. But I do remember that. I remember it opening, and Sandman came out and hit him with the kendo stick. But I think, and I think even Joey Styles said it when they did a documentary about this, as soon as that happened, the revamp of ECW was dead in the water.
That's it. You know, yeah. And you know, they did put Paul Heyman in charge of creative there, but you know who's the main figurehead here, right? Vince McMahon, the ideas live and die with him. So right. Paul Heyman, yes, is in charge. For all intents and purposes, he's not in charge. He is here, right? And you would say when Heyman would talk to on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast, he would say about that ECW brand at the time when he was in charge that he didn't like the way it was going. It was a very personal fight between me and Vince. All right. He would go on further and say, and this is a quote from the podcast. I was burned out. I was tired. I had lost my life for it, and I couldn't find my way anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the apex of this burnout is December to Dismember Fan, because he would leave and cut a promo the next ECW TV show and leave, which we are actually going to play at the end of this show. It's a quick 2-minute promo. This is, you know, for all intents and purposes, he left ECW when the original to go do commentary and left Tommy Dreamer in charge, right? Mm-hmm. As it was closing shop. For him, this was, he didn't want to retread old waters, but at the same time, yes, I'm going to put you in charge of ECW because that's what you did. You know, they did those two great comeback shows that made tons of money.
Yeah, One Night Stand, yeah.
You know, and then it was just like, I don't want to make this a weekly show. He had no passion for it either. When you have somebody else barking orders, when you used to be the head guy in charge with a desk in the middle of the locker room where people could go to you for answers, and now it's like, no, you don't have to talk to me. You have to talk to Vince also. That's a problem. And Paul Heyman has an ego as well.
Yeah.
That is a problem, you know? I also want to touch on the actual show itself. So here's I want to shout out Bleacher Report for this great, great article they wrote about almost like a 10-year retrospective of the December to Dismember. And I didn't remember this when I first realized until I started watching this pay-per-view over and read this article. But did you realize that in the beginning, Joey Styles actually screws up and says, tonight a new ECW champion will be crowned?
No. I don't remember that.
So there was no guarantee because Big Show at the time is the champion. He did beat RVD for it, right? He was the champion. He was defending, right? He was going to defend it against five other men. So he pretty much spoiled the ending in the beginning of the show. If that wasn't a sign of things to come,
yeah,
that should tell you right away.
And this would be Big Show's last match for a while because he was burnt out too.
Right, exactly. He was leaving for a while. He wanted to go down. Right, so there you go. Styles has pretty much spoiled the ending. Outside of the opening match, the tag match, and the Extreme Elimination Chamber match, they had nothing announced beforehand. There was no match card except for the main event and the opening match. Everything else was filled in day of the show. So you're expecting fans just on good faith and on the name ECW alone and on your main event because it's an Extreme Elimination Chamber to spend $40 of their money to buy this show with no undercard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. I never paid you for that. So. But, you know... So you have these matches. You have the hot opening tag match. It gets progressively worse as we go, all right? But here is the problem, right? At some point in the show, Sabu gets taken out on the stretcher. He gets removed from the match. Here's another ECW original that you're like, I remember me and you talking during this, like, damn, Sabu's probably going to do, like, a crazy spot off the cage because he's nuts. And then they took him out, and you're like, are you kidding me? Who do they replace him with? Hardcore Holly. Okay, fine. You took him out. Who do you have left? Okay, you have Rob Van Dam, Old Faithful. Maybe he'll get the title back, right? And then you got CM Punk, young, up-and-comer, fans love him, right? Straight edge, superstar, whatever, whatever, right? And then you have the other guys in Big Show, Test, which was like another revamp of Test, like for the umpteenth time, who, what they were trying to do with him. Here's where the power struggle started to emerge in this match, okay? The original idea, and this is coming directly from a former WWE writer, his name's Andrew Goldstein, on the PW Torch livecast, he said this. Paul, meaning Paul Heyman, was adamant. We have to have Punk go over the Big Show and put the ECW title on this guy and let's ride him. And Vince, whether it was a good idea or not, because it came from Paul Heyman, he said, oh no, Big Show, Big Show, Big Show, Bobby Lashley, I'm going to make this my own, Paul, shut up. This is an opportunity. So for Paul Heyman, if you also watch CM Punk's DVD as well, Paul Heyman said his original idea was for the Big Show and Punk to be in the ring together, Punk get him in the Anaconda Vice, and right before the next person was supposed to come out, Big Show was going to tap out and put Punk over by tapping him out. Tell the audience, you are going to see a new champion. And you have Big Show as the first person eliminated. They didn't want to do that. And there goes the problem, right? He wanted to cash in on Punk's momentum. I don't know if you remember this. That particular Survivor Series, CM Punk was on a team with the Generation X and the Hardy Boys.
And he got the loudest pop, yeah.
And he got the loudest pop when Triple H went over to him and he was like, he said, are you ready? And the crowd went ballistic. Paul Heyman saw this and was like, we need to cash in on this guy's momentum. Let's make him the champion. They didn't see it. They saw the big, buff, has the look, Bobby Lashley. They give the title to him. So, okay, fine. McMahon wins. It's McMahon's company. This is the problem here, right? And then as soon as these guys are eliminated, what do the fans start chanting? Where's our refund? Now you've lost the fans.
Yeah.
You killed them with Rob Van Dam. You left out Sabu. You took out CM Punk. Okay, And then the action for it being an Extreme Elimination Chamber match, and when we turn this on, we'll see it. There was nothing extreme about this Elimination Chamber. It was very, very tame in comparison. The first Elimination Chamber for 2002 was a lot more extreme than this Extreme Elimination Chamber.
Right.
Right.
I do remember, I think the only weapon that I can remember them actually using is a chair in this match. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, I think, as I said before, the ECW was dead in the water from the start. And this was, for all intents and purposes, this was really the final nail in the coffin. And that would be up until Vince McMahon became ECW champion himself. Which then you realize that this is
just... If that wasn't the nail in the coffin with the zombie, that's it right there.
Right, yeah. So it's just like you realize that this isn't going anywhere. They really did take all the air out of what could have been a fun event, but poor planning, poor execution, and a struggle of to, you know, who should go over just led to what is considered the worst WWE pay-per-view of all time.
It was named the worst pay-per-view, worst major show of the year by the Observer Newsletter. Heyman again said that it was an indescribably bad show on that same podcast with Steve Austin. It only got 90,000 buys, which according as of this article was the lowest in WWE history.
Yeah, and a 4,800 people attendance in Augusta, Georgia.
That's, again, not great. And it's but I mean, think about that. Because of all of that and the matches being as bad as they were, I mean, it's no mistake that ECW never got a shot at their own brand pay-per-view again. And this is the problem. And you'll see in the very next episode of ECW, Paul Heyman cut this promo where he is crying and talking about the big show, almost being upset. And at the very end, just says, yep, that's it, I'm done, and walks off. And he's gone for a long time. Big Show goes and takes a break. And Big Show was upset as well because he saw this as his opportunity to put Punk over. And he wanted to do it before he left, and they wouldn't let him. So a lot of problems here. We just went through a lot of backstory, a lot of stuff to take in. But you can't just watch this match without know the context of how bad this is. Because if you're a fair weather fan, you say, what's one of the worst matches you've ever seen in WWE history? And I say, well, it's December to Dismember, the Extreme Elimination Chamber. And the next question usually is, well, why is it the worst?
Right. Why?
And this is how you get it. I mean, there's a lot more story to this pay-per-view and to this match than maybe you could explain in a sitting with a fan. Or an up-and-coming fan, let's say. Like, if my son went to ask me this, I would say the same thing. But you have to. You have to know the context behind this match. You can't just call it the worst match without knowing why. And there's a lot of stuff between the match card and the matches and the backstage politics. It's a clusterfuck.
Let me ask you before we get rolling with watching the match. I want to talk about Bobby Lashley a little bit. Bobby Lashley does go on to win this match, become the ECW champion. He would be a two-time ECW champion in his career. We all have been watching Bobby since his return to the WWE, which when he did come back, he kind of floundered a little bit, like they didn't really know what to do with him. But now he's really on a roll with, you know, being part of the Hurt Business. He's the U.S. champion. And I think he is better than he ever was. And I know when he left WWE, he did a little bit of MMA. He went to Impact. He was the Impact champion. He really made a name for himself there and kind of showed, you know, the hardcore fans who would watch Impact showed the fans that he could actually be a good wrestler and really work a really good match. He's had good matches with Drew McIntyre, just many other people in Impact. And then he makes his big comeback. But at this point, in 2006, he had only been in the company for a year. He debuted at the Survivor Series the previous year. Obviously very green, but he had the look. He had the size. He certainly has the athletic ability. And he's given the belt in this match, and they put ECW on his back. Now, everything that you talked about with Paul Heyman wanting to do things a certain way and Vince McMahon wanting to do things his way, how did you think Bobby Lashley felt being put in this position where he was going to be, one, vilified by the fans of ECW who were like, we don't want this guy. You know, two, he's green. And there's nothing wrong with being green. Brock Lesnar was green and was champion. I mean, and it did work for him. But with Bobby, the fans just weren't behind him. Like, they didn't buy into him like they bought into a Brock Lesnar. I almost want to say that I kind of feel bad for the position that Bobby was in, because I'm sure he wanted to try and give his best and be the guy that they wanted him to be, but it just didn't work. And he probably did suffer a lot of that backlash because of ECW's failure as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough. There's a lot to unpack right there, but Lashley himself, right? Again, yeah, like you said, very green, right? He couldn't cut a promo. And right. A guy like that, like you say, well, Brock Lesnar did the same thing and he shined, but you also have Paul Heyman in his corner.
Paul Heyman speaking for him.
Dynamite promos for him, right?
Right.
You know, I wonder if they actually gave him a mouthpiece and they didn't have to turn him heel, but maybe gave him a manager and see how he would have did better. In the ring, he wasn't terrible. You know, right. he put on a good show and stuff like that. You know, I think he was also, one, he suffered from, it was too early in his career to be giving him all this. Could he run with the ball? Could he not? We saw what Lesnar do. Okay, so be it. He was also injured quite a lot. You know, we had that U.S. title run, but then he had that, elevated, elevator enzyme. So he had to leave for a while. Then they thought he had, a torn rotator cuff, but it turned out he didn't. But he had a shoulder injury. And then he left. You know, he was gone, right? I mean, he was only there for 3 years, 2005 to 2008. And then he was gone, right? Supposedly, he was dating Crystal Marshall, and there was supposedly, some racist
some incident, and they both left, yeah.
So they both left, right? He did the MMA thing for a while. He went to AAA for a little while. TNA is where he actually really did shine. To me, that's where, you know, every wrestler needs seasoning. And I don't want to be disrespectful and call Impact the minor leagues, because at the time that he was there, there was a lot of great wrestlers there. But he went there and became better. He actually could cut a halfway decent promo. He became vicious. They had that match. It was him and Drew Galloway at the time. Where you had to win by knockout. And it was a hard-hitting match. They had some really good matches. And when he was there, and I was never a Lashley fan in his first run, because I felt like, for me, and this is nothing against him personally, it's the fact that it's the same typical thing that Vince McMahon always does. He finds this guy who has the great look, he's not ready, and they just throw all this momentum behind them, and it shows when they're not ready. They have these piss-poor matches. And then in Lashley's case, which happens to some of these guys too, they end up flaming out and leaving. Mm-hmm. And you just put all this momentum by this guy. You give him the ACW championship, and now he's gone. And that pissed me off, because it's like, you know, push somebody else that's been there consistently, you know, stuff like, you know, guys like that. You know, even like a CM Punk, who's been wrestling on the independent scene for so long. It's not his fault. It's WWE's fault, you know. Mm-hmm. When I saw him in TNA, and I was like, this is if Lashley came back to WWE like this, he could be a badass dude. So when he came back, I was like, okay, listen, let's see what they do with him. Let's see if they can build off the momentum of Impact, make him a monster, kill him. And they made him this smiling, I used to be an ex-soldier, I love my family, Bobby Lashley, who was feuding with Sami Zayn. It sucked. Yeah. And then he beat Roman Reigns. You thought, okay, they're going to do something with it. They never did. He wanted the match with Lesnar. He never got it. And then, for me, it was like, if, again, where I blame Lashley the first time in WWE, this time it's like, yo, this is WWE's fault. You could have had him come in and start kicking ass, great feuds with Reigns, Brock Lesnar, whoever, and they wasted it. And that just now, and you're talking about in the last year or so, putting him with MVP, because the thing with Lon and Rusev was shit.
Yeah.
Putting him with MVP, giving him a mouthpiece, right? Because as improved as he was, Lashley still promo still lacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then putting him with the Hurt Business. Now, this dude looks like a legit badass. And I said this last week also, man. Lashley looks like a legit contender. Like, you know, him with the U.S. title and having this match with potentially Matt Riddle and Keith Lee, he looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they should have been doing from the get-go. At this point in his career, however, in 2006, if I'm Lashley, okay, yeah, I want the ball. I want to prove how good I am. For me, I'd be pissing my pants.
Yeah.
I'm 2 years in the business. They want to make you champion. Yeah, I'm excited as hell. But at the same time, it's like, dude, I cannot screw this up. And the fans, and you're talking about ECW fans or WWE ECW fans who love Rob Van Dam. They love this new guy, CM Punk, on the scene. You know you're going to get booed out of the building. That has to be expected at this point. Yeah. No? And then this wouldn't last either. He would have the feud with Vince, get the title back, and then get drafted to Raw and drop the ECW title anyway. So what was the point of all this, right? You know, whatever. I'm not the biggest Lashley fan. I'm glad to see where he's at now in the spot, because I think he legitimately is showing what he could really do. And I think he's better served as a monster heel as he is now. And I'm a big fan of the Hurt Business. I love what MVP is doing. I was always a big fan of MVP. And I love that he's bringing these guys together, especially guys like Shelton and Cedric,
mm-hmm.
or another kind of like wallowing on the roster, and they're giving them some momentum. They're tag team champions, the U.S. champion, you know, it's good stuff, man. And I hope it works out. And I think him and Keith Lee could put on a show at WrestleMania if that's where they're going. But that being said, Mr. Lashley, your number is being called. We're going to the WWE Network. We're going to ECW December to December. If you can't find it, you're going to click on the tab that says all shows, and it's going to tell you shows that are, you know, retired. All right. ECW December to December 2006. You're going to click the tab where it says Extreme Elimination Chamber Match. And if you don't have that tab, it's at 1 hour, 35 minutes, 24 seconds. And Chris, are you ready here?
I am ready.
All right. We're going to count this down. We're going to go 3, 2, 1. We're going to hit some play. I'm going to throw the sound on in the beginning.
2 miles of change. And now, because it is the first ever Extreme Elimination Chamber, contains weapons.
Let me tell you something.
I was always a big fan of Joey Styles as a commentator.
Walk into this chamber while no one was here.
So this is Joey Styles and Taz on commentary.
I walked in that thing, and I'll tell you, I just got the feeling like I didn't belong in there. You get that feeling like you don't belong in there. That, it's just a weird...
So you have a crowbar, barbed wire bat.
I got that crowbar just hanging there. It's funny.
And here are the rules. 4 competitors will be loaded into the pods with weapons. 2 competitors will start in the chamber. After a 5-minute period, one of the pods will open at random, releasing not only a competitor, but one of the 4 weapons. Elimination from this matchup is by pinfall or submission, and the last man remaining will be ECW World Champion.
So there is no crowd reaction for this cage being lowered whatsoever. And the chamber is also incredibly slow.
Yeah. There's the baseball bat and barbed wire. There's a table.
Heyman said last week, it's a good point. It's a steel chair, man. There's a crowbar, too. A steel crowbar.
Ooh.
I mean, that could do some damage. Not for nothing. There's the chair.
So I'm going to hit. I'm going to kill the sound here. There is no extremeness about, like, now, if there was weapons all around this cage, absolutely. One weapon in each pod. It's a good idea in theory, right? Every time a wrestler releases, a new weapon gets released. But can we think of something else better than a crowbar? Okay, table, you have to add. It's obligatory, right?
Excuse me. I remember when this match was announced, and I could be wrong, but I remember as Big Show comes out, he's the first man out here, the current champion at the time. I remember Paul Heyman saying that there would be weapons all around the cage, and I'm thinking like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome type shit, you know, but that's not what it was.
But I agree. Right. Exactly. When you hear all around the cage, you're not thinking one for every pod. You're thinking right. Like, yo, this shit is hanging off the chain link like crazy. We're just going to rip something off and get going. Brass knuckles, steel chair, kendo stick, which I'm surprised a kendo stick is not even involved in this at this point.
Yeah.
You know, anything. Just a random weapons hanging off. I mean, if you think about the Asylum match between Ambrose and Jericho,
yeah.
Had it at each corner. There was a couple of weapons here and there. One of them was a potted plant. So who the hell, creative genius is there? But I get it, you know, in memory of Mitch. But at this point, there's 4 weapons. There's nothing extreme about it. The chamber itself is more extreme than these weapons that you're including.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It's just right away, they're selling you short. And here's Big Show. He's looking
gigantic.
He's huge at this point.
And this would be, as I said before, his last match until he would return in, was it 2008, the Royal Rumble of 2008? And he would start his feud with Floyd Mayweather. And he would come back like real skinny and, or skinny as he can be for a guy his size, but, you know, very, lost a lot of weight, was in great shape. But he was burnt. The story that I read at the time that he was burnt out and was actually emotional about it because he just needed the time off.
Right. His contract actually expired a little while after he had left. So this is 2 months after December to Dismember. On February 8th, 2007, his contract would actually expire. He actually went to Memphis briefly. He was going to do a match with Hulk Hogan at some wrestling event, PMG Clash of Legends, and WWE actually pulled him from the match.
Wow. Here comes CM Punk.
He was introduced as Paul the Great White and said that Big Show was his slave name and he didn't want to be owned anymore. So you could see him kind of being disillusioned with WWE at this point. And then he returned in 2008, right? That's unbelievable. That's disgusting. Big Show with his face pressed against the glass. It's freaking fogging up. He just looks weird and creepy. And let's hear this ovation for CM Punk.
CM Punk now, he had never been part of something like this. But CM Punk, who has been rocketing in popularity with ECW fans, is without question the biggest match in CM Punk's young career.
And this is nothing against CM Punk. This crowd is dead.
Yeah, the crowd is dead. Yeah.
The crowd is dead. They're cheering for him. He probably has the loudest pop at this point, but he also, the crowd is just between the undercard at this point, they sucked all the air out of the room. So there's no life. You can see the people now. There's a smattering of fans in the front standing up. Everybody in the upper level is all sitting down. There's nobody on their feet there. And you could actually see a lot of the seats are actually blacked out because there's nobody in the stands. Yep. Right where CM Punk is standing, look over his shoulder. You see that? Yeah, there's a whole section there blacked out. So this is pretty bad here at this point. I mean, wow. And they're showing it willingly on the camera too.
It's hard to, it's a big section. So I guess at that point, what can you do? I like his Cobra tattoo there.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe Cobra.
I do not like the Pepsi one on the other side, though.
Every time I see, when I go back and watch a show, an old show that has CM Punk, I always ask myself, will he ever come back?
I'm always like, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Here comes Test. I don't know if he will at this point, but do we hold him kind of responsible for the way he left? I mean, I know people, fans love CM Punk, and fans would forgive him if he came back for the way that he left. But we've heard about other wrestlers doing it too, like Nia Jax, allegedly, I'll say, threatened to leave because she was unhappy with her spot. Same thing with Sasha Banks, allegedly. And then they come back, they get title runs, but fans were kind of annoyed at them for the way that they acted. Shouldn't we hold CM Punk to that same standard?
I think it's the fact that they went radio silent, whereas CM Punk went on a podcast and aired his grievances out as to what the problem was. Right. And when he aired those out, it just seemed like very much WWE was the villain. First of all, they sent his release on his fucking wedding day. So there you go. There's public enemy number one right there, And then all these ideas that seem to be shot down, and just stuff that he felt. I mean, there are things like he has legitimate gripes with a lot of his arguments. I've listened to that podcast a lot of times, to be honest with you. This is the Colt Cabana Art of Wrestling podcast that he went on.
Which the one that they're suing each other over, right?
Yeah. they're also no longer friends anymore, right? So that kind of gets you into the mindset of CM Punk also, Mr. Phil Brooks, let's say. But at the same time as well, right, there are also certain things like he wanted to main event WrestleMania so bad, and they didn't let him. Well, because Rock and John Cena are main event in WrestleMania. Well, put me in as a triple threat and I'll be eliminated first. I just want to be in the main event. And it's like, no. Like, no. I get it. Right? You're a huge star. Everybody loves you. No, this is the main event. You want to be in it so bad. And then, he went back to the story of, and this is Mr. Bobby Lashley coming out now.
Yep.
He looks exactly the same.
Yeah, he's 44 now.
He has not aged. stuff like, you're the real main event. You're with Undertaker. Well, then pay me like it. Okay. Well, that's not something you should be airing out in that case. Other things I totally agree with. There are certain things in that argument or in that podcast where I'm like, enough. Okay. I get it. But like pick and choose your battles here. I hated the CM Punk chants by the fans constantly, like as goading, WWE. I also loved when he lost his first. I didn't love when he lost his first UFC fight. What I loved was the aftermath when they were chatting CM Punk and Stephanie McMahon said, if you last 3 minutes, you'll last 2 minutes and 58 seconds longer than Punk did, or whatever it was. And I love that she threw it back at the fans because it's like, screw you now. The CM Punk chants have since calmed down, which I'm glad they did because it was prevalent for a long time. I mean, him being on backstage for a bit, I mean, I know he was hired by Fox, but that seemed to maybe give you an indication of maybe he was thinking of coming back.
I actually thought that's when I was like, for sure he's coming back. And I thought he was going to work a match with Seth Rollins.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
But it didn't happen.
So at this point, four, four pods are filled up. There is a riot officer on the outside. I'm guessing that's by Paul Heyman. Lashley is in the pod with the table. Big Show has the barbed wire bat. CM Punk has the chair. And Test has the crowbar that he's just gripping in his hands. Test no longer with us. Andrew Martin passed away very young.
Very young age. I always thought I was always okay with Test. Like I wouldn't say he was one of my favorites, but I didn't dislike him either. I always thought he had a cool look. And they tried a couple times to push him, but didn't really. I don't think they ever got to the level that they thought he could get to.
He had a couple of solid matches. I think his best match, in my opinion, was the match against Shane McMahon at SummerSlam. The Love Her match.
All the way back in 1999.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that was a really good match. But like I said, like, you know, they did the TNA thing with Test and Albert. They tried to get that off the ground, and then they tried to push him as a singles again. He was an Intercontinental Champion. He was a European Champion. He was a Hardcore Champion. Tag team champion.
Americans.
Right, and it's just and the Union. Remember that brief stable? Yeah, it just never. Nothing really ever took off for him. In this point in ECW, though, I could have seen him as an ECW champion.
Oh yeah, absolutely, I could have.
But the problem is, too, you know, his demons got the better of him. Unfortunately, he passed away when he was 33, which is terrible. Also have a brief run in Impact, too, right? Wasn't he? He just went by his real name, Andrew Martin.
Yeah.
All right. You know, so he did have some stops here and there. Man, it's just it's unfortunate, man. A guy like that passing away. So he also did a Stacey Keibler for a bit. You know that? And Kelly Kelly?
Yep.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Well, also died 4 days prior to his 34th birthday.
That's crazy.
Neighbors saw him motionless on the couch for some time, and they called 911. Accidental overdose of prescription pain medication, oxycodone.
Which seems, unfortunately, to be a common theme with wrestlers who've passed away.
Yeah. And it also was later revealed by Dr. Bennett Omalu, who was the lead one in concussion, the lead pathologist. He had severe CTE. So, I mean, imagine that. That's another one where I feel like a lot of these wrestlers coming out, and I hope this never happens anytime soon, but I'm really interested. I know Mick Foley is saying that he will donate his brain after he passes away. With the amount of stuff that he's been in, what his brain would look like. That's going to be probably a modern marvel at this point.
So here we got Hardcore Holly and Rob Van Dam about to start the match.
Listen, and this is nothing against Hardcore Holly, but I don't like Hardcore Holly.
I was never really a fan of his either. I think, to me, he was always just there.
Good hand.
Yeah, right? I mean, okay. he was always, he always put on decent matches, and was just somebody who was there, I think. I want to say to fill the roster, which may sound negative, but I mean, he did have a really long run there. He also had the reputation of being, and this is just from what we've seen and heard and read. Obviously, we don't know him, but he had the reputation of being a bully and kind of not really being a nice guy.
Especially
if you were a rookie.
Yeah, like that's what gets me, stuff like that. You hear stories of him, stories of JBL and their hazing, their bullying, and that stuff like that pisses me off. You know, and that's where the Undertaker comment "where men were men" kind of pisses me off too. Like, okay, so you're okay with bullying or, you know, people stabbing each other in the shower, like fucking Bruiser Brody happening, whatever, you know. I always loved Thurman Sparky Plug better because that was a great name. but Hardcore Holly, I guess he'll always be known as. I mean, at this point, yeah, he's in. So they have a timer in the left hand corner. We're at 3:53. Mm-hmm. And after 5 minutes, the initial 5 minute period, somebody will come out next. Now, okay, and I know I'm nitpicking here, right? The title of this match is Extreme Elimination Chamber. Okay, and I know we're only 2 minutes in, right? But there's nothing extreme about this Elimination Chamber right now. It's the same Elimination Chamber we saw in 2002 that Rob Van Dam was in, right? No one, you know, utilize the cage as a weapon. Maybe have weapons all around, like Paul Heyman initially said. I don't know. I digress here. But
Robert them showing his legendary athleticism. Yeah, jumping onto the cage and then trying to jump off, but Hulk Hogan moved and RVD hit the ropes.
Wow. I mean, he's down, selling it pretty good, and Hardcore looks like he's taking a breather.
When you think about all of the Elimination Chamber matches that have taken place, 26 up to this point, that number will grow after this coming Sunday. And all of the people who have competed, you forget that this match, you know, Hardcore Holly was in an Elimination Chamber match. So was Test. So was Bobby Lashley, who I don't think has been in one since this one.
Right.
Rob Van Dam was in the first, and he was in this. And I don't think he was ever – I know he had runs later on when he would come back, but I don't think he was in another one.
Punk would be in several, as was
– Yeah, Punk was in a few.
Show. And yeah, this might have been Test's only Elimination Chamber. And you actually forget that at this point, 2006, Test was still with the company, right? Because he was from the Attitude Era. And it's pretty incredible that he would still be here. He had a pretty long run too when you look at it, right? I mean, he started off as the roadie for Motley Crue, being part of the corporation, and then, you know, and you know what? And while we're on the subject of Test, I don't understand why when the McMahon-Helmsley faction started in Triple H World Champion that they never factored him into that feud. It would have been the most logical thing to do, given that they were going to get married and then Triple H broke it up by literally stealing her and getting married overnight. And they never factored him in ever again.
No, they didn't. And if you remember, I think it was it late 2000, mid-2000? When they did that storyline where the cops were called on Triple H for like domestic abuse, and it turned out that Test was the one who called the cops,
right?
And they had that one match on Raw, and then never again capitalized on it. But I remember hearing a story about that angle where Test and Stephanie were dating; they were going to get married. Triple H, you know, kind of stole her away, which, you know, he drugged her and then married her, which is in today's society extremely problematic.
He'd be canceled ASAP.
But I remember the story being that Vince Russo was the one who came up with that and then left for WCW, like mid-story, and they didn't know what to do with it when he left. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I remember the story being around that feud or that storyline.
Right. I mean, it was crazy that they never factored him in. And yeah, like you said, it was who called the cops on him. And now at this point, he's with Trish Stratus, and this is years later.
Yeah, like, who cares at this point?
He's like, oh, I made a little call to the police. And I remember watching that on Raw and being like, now you're going to do it? And then you had the one match, Triple H won, and then that was it.
Yeah, that was it.
You know, and it was just like, okay, whatever, dude. And now we're at 5, 4, 3, 2. Do they play the same music that the original Chamber? Let's find out. Oh, this one's more menacing. More extreme, if you will. And a gong at the end.
And it's CM Punk. Next one is CM
Punk. And that crowd just went ballistic, if you just didn't hear that when it went off. Very, very much. Let's hear this crowd again. The crowd is hot for CM Punk, man.
Yeah. Getting back to Test once again real quick. I do remember the testicles thing that they tried doing with him when Stacy Keibler was calling his fans the testicles.
Yeah, that was, oh, God. Unbelievable. So how about this? Rob Van Dam just grabbed the chair from CM Punk. He went to go toss it at Rob Van Dam. He caught it and then threw it right at CM Punk's head. And CM Punk took that shot unprotected on his head.
Well,
what we know about head injuries now, I'm glad these guys do not do that anymore. I'm not going to lie. You know, they use the chairs on the back and then on the midsection, and I'm glad they don't take these unprotected chair shots anymore, which is something that I hope AEW, I've seen them do it in the past. I hope they don't do it anymore and just, you know, get a little smarter with that. All right. So now it's another 5-minute period. So we're doing five minutes in between. So if this show, of course, this show was actually running short and it would clock in at, like I said before, 2 hours 17 minutes, having 5 minutes in between does make sense, but at this point it's like, where are we at, the 9 o'clock hour?
Yeah it's very early. You know, like we said before, 2 hours 14 minutes this would run, so minute each interview interval it was needed,
right?
Busted open.
Was that a hard way busted open there with that elbow?
No, he was busted open before that.
Oh, okay. So here we go. Okay, so here, oh my God. Throw him into the corner. They wedged the chair in between the turnbuckle. He just rammed RVD, who just went into that chair with no problem. Again, didn't put his hands up or anything because he's ECW. He's hardcore. And then CM Punk proceeded to kick it into his face. That's, wow. So there you go. There's a little bit of extreme there. We got some blood. We got some chair shots going on. Yeah, that's the only weapon that's been there so far.
Here's look another. At this. A pinfall on the cage platform there.
Right. So almost. they would allow that for a few matches, then eventually they would change it to it needed to be in the ring. Yeah. But essentially, for the first few chamber matches, it would be almost like a false count anywhere in the chamber. Big Show just hanging off the chain link there. Which, again, it made for a good thing. Like, Big Show tried to reach outside the chamber from the roof and try to grab CM Punk on the entrance. But again, I'm so glad that they have the platforms now where they could, you know, it's more aesthetically pleasing, and two, it helps the guys. They can do better moves that way. You know, we're not going to have Robert and them crushing people's windpipes here. That's a 2-minute warning here for these three. Robin Dan's been selling that injury for a little while now with the blood. Hardcore Holly, nice hanging him over there. Hardcore Holly just looks like he's extremely tired right now. Looks like he's blown up, man.
Hardcore Holly has also looked like he's been 55 years old his entire life.
Yeah. The blonde hair doesn't help, too, because it almost looks like he's bald up top.
Yeah.
Really just bleached blonde. He'll be forever 45. I like Crash Holly better. Just going to put that out there.
Oh. Well, rest in peace, Crash Holly.
Another one, right? I mean, at this point, Lashley's banging on the glass. I guess to try to get the crowd. So once Punk came out, they had that initial reaction. Now the crowd's back to just being like, yeah, when's the next guy coming out? Very disinterested. If you just look at the crowd here, they're just sitting still. Like, no one's cheering. No one's clapping. You know, and again, there are down periods when you're in a live wrestling event, but this crowd just looks like they're just not feeling it. And there's a superplex that just happened. No reaction from the crowd. 45 seconds here. Big Show looks like he's tired already. He hasn't even entered the match yet. I do want to get some crowd reactions when these guys are pinned and eliminated at this point. But,
and I think Test is the one who eliminates both CM Punk and Rob Van Dam.
Really? Wow. So it's not even the eventual winner or the champion. So there's something for you there too, right? So they're trying to guess. I don't know. Maybe put some momentum behind Test and give you like a little bit of a surprise. But again, it's a WWE product and Lashley, Test, and I guess you'll say Big Show as well versus the people who they want to see win in RVD or CM Punk.
Yeah, here comes another competitor. It's going to be Test.
And they didn't list out the names in each pod like they had did in previous years where it was like, okay, here's this guy in this corner. You're just kind of assuming because you know. And here comes Test with a crowbar. Oh, right in the midsection. Way to go. You use that crowbar, buddy. And it looks like he's trying to grind it into RVD's forehead.
Yep.
That's so extreme. That's too extreme for me. Look at that. Really getting in there. You know who would benefit from an Extreme Elimination Chamber match? New Jack. Everybody would have died. Just put
Did
it that way.
Did you watch that Dark Side of the Ring episode with New Jack?
Yeah. I don't know how anybody ever let him into a ring ever. I came away from that match like, from that episode like, how did people sign him? How do people let him in matches? Like, yeah, man, I was trying to kill him when I threw him off the scaffolding. Like, what?
Yeah, he
unbelievable.
Yeah, and apparently WWE was interested in signing him for a little bit. Do you remember when Carlito and John Cena were feuding, and Carlito had his henchman come out
in the club?
Yeah, he stabbed him. Yeah. That was originally supposed to be New Jack.
Oh, that's a great way to bring him in too. Stab somebody because he has done it. Stab people in matches. So you know. I'm so glad he didn't end up coming to WWE, man. those guys in those cases, like a New Jack and stuff, were products of ECW where they highlighted the positives of the guy and they really were good at hiding the negatives. So he was great at brawling, kicking people's asses. He can never have a wrestling match, you know? Oh, right. Five-star frog splash.
Five-star frog splash, CM Punk there, but not going for the cover.
Busted open, and Tesh just got in the match, and he's already on the floor of the chamber.
So CM Punk could be eliminated here.
Yep, he's out. So CM Punk went from I want him to win to but first person eliminated. Listen to this crowd.
What the hell happened there?
What the hell just happened there?
So he was supposed to
hit. No, Holly's out.
Whoa, was that? That was a botch. If I ever seen a botch.
So I was wrong about Test eliminating CM Punk, but Test will wind up eliminating RVD. But that was an extreme botch right there with whatever happened with Test and Hardcore Holly.
So he wanted... So Test was signaling for RVD to get up for the big boot. He was giving the big boot to Hardcore Holly. The ref counts 1-2, and then you hear the ref say to Test, no, the shoulder was up, the shoulder was up. Test gets up, and then the referee tells Hardcore Holly that he's eliminated. So ref problem. Ref tried to cover Hardcore Holly getting his first of all, another unprotected chair shot. My God, man. The ref tried to protect that Hardcore Holly's shoulder was up, but then tells Holly that he's eliminated. So that was really bad. Really bad. CM Punk being the first person eliminated is also very bad. The crowd just now the crowd's out of it. They're booing. RVD
big spot right here.
Wow, Tess with an elbow off the top of the oh my God, look at he crushed his face.
Right into the chair, into RVD's face. RVD's eliminated here.
And the crowd is booing, but not like just
not,
booing.
Not for the right reason.
No.
But that was a pretty cool spot, though.
They're yelling bullshit. Lashley's like, what did I get myself into right now with that facial expression?
And here you're right. You got Test in the ring by himself, and both Lashley and Big Show are in the pod still, and there is no one left in the ring to work the match with Test. He's just
so now you himself. Have a long period. Why couldn't you just have RVD and Test work this match until somebody else came in?
Right.
And his elbow didn't even land. It was his hip that landed on the chair into his face. It was a cool spot, but it was dangerous as hell.
Sure. Or even at this point, we have 40 seconds left.
Wow.
For the chamber to be open. Just open the next chamber.
Right.
You know? Yeah, fans not happy about this at all. But
fans are pissed off at this point. So let me just kill the sound right there for a little bit. The fans are very pissed off. Not to mention the fact that you just eliminated CM Punk. He was the first person eliminated. You had the botch with Hardcore Holly, and then you eliminate RVD, where you pretty much crushed his face. All right. Test is struggling to get up. He grabs a crowbar. There was more than 40 seconds left between the next entry, and the crowd is just dead now. If they weren't dead before, dude, they're dead now. Here's the next person. Absolutely. Let's go to the sound. So the crowd is cheers. So who is in the who's the riot police?
They're preventing the door from being open.
Do you hear the crowd saying bullshit now?
Yeah, I heard that. These guys in riot gear are preventing the door from being open, so Bobby Lashley is stuck in his pod.
Which makes no sense because you would want Lashley out of the pod to fight Test to weaken him for Big Show to win the match. Show's not the last person in, right? So you'd want him in the chamber match so he could get damaged and get hurt. But these riot police that are with Paul Heyman are preventing him from going in. So by him not going into the match at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're saving his energy.
Yeah.
But now
actually using the chair to... Which the chair, it's the legs are stuck in the cage.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's using he's using the table to clear out the roof. It's actually a pretty decent spot, right?
Yeah. Using
the table to get through the roof But now, because the pod's not open, the table won't be used as of right now. Let's not say not ever, right? Oh, my God. Testing his crowbar. He just kicks him off. And Lashley's struggling to get off. Okay, here we go. Oh, my God. That's a bad clothesline.
Trying to look up to see if there's any word on what happened with that spot with Hardcore Holly.
That was I totally forgot about that spot, and that's very bad. Okay, so he just threw him through the pod. Well, the pod door, the plexiglass came off as he threw Test through. The crowd now at this point has been yelling bullshit for a while. They're kind of not happy. Did they ever reveal who the riot police would be for Paul Heyman, or am I wrong on that?
I don't remember it being revealed.
Why do I feel that it was the Basham Brothers? Am I wrong here?
I honestly don't remember.
Oh, there's another one to look up. So he threw him into the pod door, plexiglass, but now he threw him to the other, not necessarily threw him to the other one. He hit the other one and the glass broke anyway. And now it's just this, 40 seconds too late at this point. They should have just kept this going at this point. Unbelievable. Wow. There's literally a guy, he's drinking a beer in the crowd. And I think he just checked the time on his phone to see when this was going to be over. The crowd has no interest in this crowd. And guys, I'm not being... I know we joke around and we exaggerate here, but this is no bullshit. They're like, the crowd is chanting, they're sitting and they're standing, but they're not standing in a good way like, oh, this match is awesome. They're standing in a way like, I want to get the fuck out of here as soon as possible because they're pissed. And when I say the guy, look, the guy who was just checking his phone, drinking the beer, is now turning and having a conversation with somebody, not even paying attention to the match. He's dead center. He's hard camera side. You can see exactly who I'm talking about. He's wearing a white polo shirt with black stripes. At Wrestling Guys PC, correct me if I'm wrong here. I am not. He is not interested whatsoever. And you have like a little contingent of fans that are standing up behind him, not making any noise. They're just standing watching it because I think they're legitimately waiting for the pay-per-view to be over. Here's the spear, which not so good. Let's go to audio here for this last bit. So Test is eliminated. Big Show's pissed off because now it's him and Big Show left. And there's a minute and 12 seconds left. That's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, it's not good.
Poorly timed out. Okay. Now it's just a minute of him waiting.
Now, I want to say this, Bobby Lashley is setting up the table. I haven't watched this match in a long time, but
I might not have seen this match until we saw it live.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, but even with a minute and 12 seconds left, here you go. He's throwing the table at the pod.
So now the table's wrecked.
The table is destroyed now, but so you could have at least had Lashley like trying to break his way, which he's trying to, but it's just not enough. Like break his way into the pod to get Big Show out.
Right. So that's a decent moment, right? Trying to break through the pod, but you could have set up the table to have a nice spot. Now the table legs are wrecked. You could prop it in the corner. That's about it.
So now officially Big Show is in the match.
Oh, so Taz forgot about the weapon that was in his chamber. He just said, I just forgot about the bat, because it's supposed to be an Extreme Elimination Chamber match, and there was nothing, again, really nothing extreme about this match. The barbed wire doesn't look like barbed wire to me. So Big Show, here's the problem with this too, and this is nothing against Big Show. So for the minute and 12 seconds before that, right, he looked genuinely upset and scared that he was with Lashley, right? He's getting advice from Paul Heyman, and Paul Heyman is telling him he's going to rip you apart. You have to be careful. He'll beat you apart with his bare hands, right? He enters the pod, grabs the bat. Now he looks so menacing, like, fuck this guy. I'm going to beat him up. So he went from chicken shit to now a menacing monster heel.
Mm.
in a matter of a minute and 12 seconds. You know, trying to beat him down with the baseball bat. And there, this might be the end of the baseball bat use that we see. He gets it lodged in the cage, and that's really it. Referee just kind of pulled it out. Where does he go with it? Can't really see. Big Show celebrating. Crowd is not into it whatsoever. And listen, this is nothing to the people involved, right? But you labeled it Extreme Elimination Chamber, right? There's nothing extreme about it. Okay, he just threw him through another pod door, right? Where's maybe, I don't know, man. And maybe I'm being a little bit too hard on the match here, right? But when it's labeled Extreme in front of it, you're expecting something more than what they're giving you. You're just getting a typical Elimination Chamber match.
Yeah.
They didn't use the table right now. They didn't. The most use they got of was the chair and the crowbar from Test and RVD.
Right. Yeah. They can't. Big Show just breaking through the pod by himself there. They can't even use the table at this point because it's been destroyed.
I mean, the most they could do is prop it in the corner. Stand it up and prop it in the corner and do a spot with that. But here's Lashley. Okay. He tried to spring himself off the cage that's metal and jump. And Big Show hip tossing him back, and Big Show's just drooling out the mouth, looking like Cujo over here. Okay. Big Show already looks like he's tired. This is not, he's not too long for this match. There is literally, as we're talking right now, there is 3 minutes left in this match. Yeah, and I think a minute and a half of it is Lashley celebrating. Here we go. This might be the end sequence here. Yep, into a DDT, reversed by Lashley. So here it is again. There are people in this crowd standing up. Look at the same. Look, there's another guy now dancing in the crowd. Okay, that same contingent of fans are standing because I've seen this before. I've seen this before in pay-per-view matches before that were disinterested. People are standing up, but they're kind of walking sideways slowly to the exit, but they still want to watch what's going on. Yeah. So at this point, as soon as it's over, they're leaving. They don't care. They don't want to see an ending sequence or anything like that. And I've seen this happen before, and that's exactly what it is. There's more of a gathering of people now where that contingent was because they're all waiting to head to the exit as soon as this match is done. What was that? He jumped right into a power slam for the Big Show. Lashley reverses. Here we go.
And there's a spear.
That Big Show. Big Show looks so disinterested. So there is some cheering.
There's a bit of a reaction there.
Yeah.
Positive one.
Was it positive for Lashley or glad because it's over?
You know, I'm going to be fair and say it was a mix of both.
Yeah, it does. No, they are panning the crowd. They are showing people cheering. It does look like it's something for Lashley. Heyman is hands selling the loss and probably selling the end of his WWE career here.
I couldn't find anything that explained what happened with that Hardcore Holly spot.
Right. Wow.
There's that ECW title there.
So after the initial sounds of the crowd cheering, there is no sound from the crowd now at all. So right. You hear some smattering of cheers here. There's people literally just standing in place, not clapping, not cheering. Look, guys, look at the hard camera side if you're watching this. The crowd is at a standstill, Chris. I know you see this too, right? I mean, Now you're seeing some crowd. And the riot police that tried to keep him in the pod are standing by and watching. Don't try to interfere. Don't do nothing. They literally stood there and watched him walk out of the chamber.
I think everybody at this point was glad that it was over.
Yeah.
But a big moment for Lashley, regardless. I mean, he does come out the winner with the ECW title and is the face of that brand, at least at this point. And that's the end right there.
That's it. We're celebrating with Pyro. We go off, and that's it. That's the end of the pay-per-view at that point. Yeah. That's – okay. Now, to be fair, I know I was criticizing a lot, but I was just trying to give you a breakdown of what I saw, right? If you look at the the crowd reaction. There was some crowd reaction for last year. There was some people cheering, but there were people just sitting there and staring like, okay, it's over. I'm ready to leave. That little contingent of people that was just like maybe a row of people ends up being two rows of guys pretty much watching it, waiting to leave. You eliminate your two stars in the beginning, RVD, CM Punk's the first one eliminated, RVD. You have long stretches of nothing going on. Test waiting for the next person to come in. Lashley, a full minute and 12 seconds waiting for Big Show. And granted, he tried to do something where he broke through and everything like that. It's, I don't know. We had talked about this in the beginning, and I'm going to flip the question to you. Was this bad because of the undercard being so bad, or was it the match?
I think the match was okay. You know, what they gave it, 2.5 stars?
Yeah.
Which I think is fair. I think the match was okay. I think that one match suffered from the overall card being bad. And, you know, the fans, I don't think you even need to be a quote-unquote mark or smart mark to realize that this was just a poor show and a poor effort from beginning to end. And it's very easy, especially at a wrestling event, to have just the wind come out of the sails when you're trying to put on a show. You know, wrestling shows are very long. And when you are not consistently trying to keep the audience interested, they're going to be disinterested very quickly. And with this pay-per-view, you start out good with the Hardys and Eminem, but then there is literally nothing else until the final match. And when you get to the final match, the two people that the fans cared about the most are eliminated. And, you know,
it takes the air out of the room.
Right, it does. And I know fans can be annoying and fans can be fickle, and you know, you can't always give in to what the fans want. You know, we can reference that whole Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan thing, but the fans clearly wanted CM Punk or Rob Van Dam. And once that did not happen, then the fans were like, well, now I really don't give a shit. And that's just what happened here. And I think it's the WWE, and I know that they have, and I know that Bruce Pritchard has talked about this, Paul Heyman, CM Punk, and many others talked about this show. They put on a bad show, and that's just the bottom line.
Absolutely. It is what it is. It's a poor effort all around. You know, and unfortunately, Paul Heyman is going to be the one that takes the blame. Less than 24 hours after this, he gets sent home. And it's announced on their official website that McMahon sent him home. And they cited slumping television ratings and a disgruntled talent roster for his dismissal. He was pulled from the creative team. He put the blame solely on Paul Heyman for the poor pay-per-view buys, for the poor show all around. He legitimately left after he's going to cut this promo we're going to play right now. And he was still in the contract. However, he said one of the main reasons was that they booked Lashley to win instead of wanting having CM Punk win it. And CM Punk, in his famous pipe bomb from 2011, would actually go on to cite this saying, you know, he was a Paul Heyman guy. He saw something in me that no one else did. And this is crazy. And I didn't know this, but looking this up, upset at how the event turned out, rumor has it that Tommy Dreamer and Stevie Richards both asked after the pay-per-view to be released from their contracts, and they were both denied. That's how bad it was. It is very poor. It's a poor effort. And to go back to what you said about, listen, you know, you don't want to get into the Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan thing. While I agree, taking the air out of the fans by having RVD and CM Punk, who they wanted to win, lose. There are ways around this. If you're giving them a lights out match, again, with the title Extreme and Elimination Chamber match, right? And you're really, you let all the pieces fall into place where you can have a legitimate who can win, we don't really know. And, you know, a good reason why they got eliminated from the match. I think the crowd would be more willing to accept Lashley as the champion than I eliminate CM Punk. I had this botch with Hardcore Holly. I eliminated RVD. And now I have this, you know, this stretch of nothing going on.
Yeah.
Now the fans are like, so, okay, so you just eliminated the two guys we wanted. You fucked up another elimination. And now you want us to sit and wait for the next guy?
Yeah.
You know, and then you have Lashley come in, Lashley versus Test. He eliminates them with more than a minute left. And now it's like, okay, you eliminated two guys. You made us sit and wait, and now you're making us fucking sit and wait again.
If the quality,
right, and yes, exactly, even longer. And now, if the quality of the match was there, where maybe there was five guys in the match, and then let's say by the time Lashley got in, then we start the eliminations one after another, you could justify it now. They're in the match longer. You know, if they made it any sort of more of extreme than what they were supposed to do, it would have been better. But at this point, it's stretches of nothing. And then right. You eliminate their two favorite guys. And the crowd turning was completely, completely on the creative team in WWE at that point with the way they booked that match. So before we get any further, so that ECW pay-per-view ended the following Tuesday, which was the next episode of ECW on Sci-Fi, which is December 5th, 2006. They opened up, and this is actually on the WWE Network. If you go to the WWE Network, WWE ECW, December 5th, 2006, the first thing on the show, and what they label it on the tab here, is Paul Heyman's final ECW appearance. I'm going to play it for you guys now. Let's have see initial reaction here. Paul Heyman, to start off, is in tears because this was filmed immediately after the pay-per-view.
This is the blood. Of the greatest ECW champion that's ever lived. This is the blood of the greatest giant that has ever walked into a wrestling ring. This is the blood of the man that have loyalty to me, agreed to carry ECW on his back and turn it from a bingo hall promotion into a global phenomenon. This is the blood of a man that got ripped off. It took an extreme elimination chamber. It took a man, a 270, 280 pound man with a weapon in his hand. Beat the champ. On behalf of Extreme Championship Wrestling, my obligation to inform everyone that this Tuesday night, the Big Show's rematch clause is being invoked. And it will not be an extreme elimination chamber. And weapons won't be legal. The ECW World title will be on the line. Bobby Lashley will have to defend the championship against the most dominant athlete in history, a 7-foot-tall, 500-pound Big Show. And it all happens this Tuesday. I'm done. Thanks.
So he has what looks like legitimate tears in his eyes, right? Mm-hmm. He cuts this promo, still, you know, very professional, cuts the promo about the Big Show. So it almost seems like he's crying about the Big Show losing. When in reality, he just had a blow up with Vince McMahon backstage, right? He cuts this promo for Big Show to set up the rematch on ECW TV. But it's the end that gets me, where he cuts the promo he's done and then goes, I'm done. Waves his hand at the camera and just walks off, mm-hmm. right? You could tell that was an F you, like, okay, I cut this promo for you to set up this match. I'm out of here. Why do you think they would still show this on TV?
That one part when he says I'm done?
Yeah, why not just cut it out?
The conspiracy theorist in me, and I am a little bit, would say that was left on purpose to maybe try to make Paul Heyman look bad. Because what's the point? Like, why leave that in? Especially if you know the backstory to it. Like, if you're working there at that point in time and Paul Heyman has this huge blowout with Vince McMahon to the point where he cries about it, and I'm not saying that to degrade him, but he is in tears and he's cutting a promo because he has to, not because he wants to. And then at the end he says, it's it, I'm done. You, if you're shooting that, you know why he says that.
Right.
So it's probably something that if I were editing it, I would say, let's take that out. But somebody said, leave it in there. And it was left in there. And it was probably, I would say, and it may be a stretch, but the only reason that I can come up with as to why it would, why we would see that as a fan watching it is to say, look at Paul Heyman give up.
It's, yeah, I think so too. I think it's almost like a F you, we're going to keep this part in anyway, who cares? And he, at this point, he's on his way out, so he could give two shits. You right. know? It was very weird. You know, they would have these moments where, you know, Heyman and WWE would, you know, they put him in a prominent position. And you would see even recently, he was put as executive director of Raw, and he was trying to push other people. And then he lasted for, what, a little under a year, and then they quietly replaced him. And you would hear stuff like, he was not... AJ Styles and the Good Brothers were not big fans of his. They called him a liar repeatedly, and that's why AJ Styles was initially sent to SmackDown. Then he got removed from his position. So he would have these clashes with people. He would have this love-hate relationship from WWE. You know, he would leave in 2006, and he'd be gone for 6 years.
He came back when Brock Lesnar came back, right?
Right. He came back in April 2012. Oh, no, I think when May of that same year, let's say. So this was a big thing, right? It led to Paul Heyman's departure. Big Show would leave. He would turn down a contract extension from WWE. He would go on saying he was burnt out. He wouldn't come back until that No Way Out would set up with the Floyd Mayweather match. And then ECW would not be the ECW you're used to seeing. It would go on to change significantly, especially, which I think is one of the worst world titles I've ever seen, when they replaced it with that Silver Eagle.
Oh, yeah. I hated it. It was huge and ugly. And yeah.
It was one of the worst. It's one of the worst world titles of all time. You know, they would go to try to mold ECW in the WWE image. It didn't work. It was a failed experiment. And then they would transfer it to NXT. And that's their one and only pay-per-view. It's terrible.
Yeah. And, I mean, we got NXT out of it. But it's a shame when you look back at WWE, ECW, and... I think just based on what I've read and seen and listened to different people talk about, when it was brought up of, hey, let's really revive this thing because the fans wanted it. They had success with the one-night stand pay-per-views.
Yeah.
They were good shows. Vince McMahon, we all know, is a very good businessman, obviously. So they saw business in bringing back ECW. And I think a lot of people felt like it would be ECW when they brought it back.
Right.
It wasn't going to be WWE's version of it, but we did get WWE's version of it. Immediately when it started, we got WWE's version of ECW, which was zombies because it was on sci-fi. And then, you know, Rob Van Dam would start out as champion, rightfully so, but would have that stripped away from him. Not stripped. I mean, he would drop the title, but the reason why is because of his bust when he got pulled over with Sabu.
Right.
And they were both punished for it. You know, you have guys like Tommy Dreamer there, who's an ECW original. The Sandman started there, but then they took him off and put him on Raw because Vince McMahon was a fan of his. Kurt Angle was drafted to ECW, apparently did not want to be there, but would also leave in 2006.
He would not last that long at all because of the Batista injury. So they had to bring him back onto SmackDown brand. I always loved when they had signed him. He went to that one night stand. He went back to SmackDown almost immediately. And the excuse was his contract with ECW was up. And I'm like, he just got there. Put up there. You know, just to put a bow on it, some of the critic reception for this pay-per-view, and we talked about the star ratings from Meltzer, but Slam Wrestling would say, quote here, did Vince and Heyman draw names out of a hat to make these matches?
That's what I just said.
nothing really made sense to me, right? Absolutely. Wade Keller would actually say the event was such a letdown overall that it really dampened the mood and thus the occasion of Lashley winning the title. So this, you know, a few critics here just not very kind to this event overall. It's just a situation where... It wasn't good. And it showed, you know, and the fact that Heyman and Vince get into a fight on the private jet on the way out shows you how bad it was. The clashes over over all this stuff and the creative direction where they wanted to go. It just really, it didn't do it, and it didn't deliver, and it was a bad idea. Having it a week after a major pay-per-view also does not help. And then it's bad on top of that too. So yeah, man. Oof. ECW, December to December, the one and only pay-per-view that they would have. And you can see why it was that bad. What did you guys think of the main event? What did you guys think of the event as a whole, if you ever decide to sit down and watch it? That might be a show for a later day to just actually sit down and watch the undercard of this. I don't want to torture you guys that much, but at Wrestling Guys PC, let us know what you think. Let us know what you think of that promo at the end as well. Paul Heyman's little 2-minute send-off. Man, a lot of stuff here. I actually like that we decided to cover this thing, but man, it's pretty brutal to watch.
Yeah, there's not much that's left to be said about it. It's, you know, obviously in the past, and it's always fun to revisit these things and talk about them, especially a show like this that has a lot of controversy surrounding it.
Was the zombie the only thing that made an appearance on ECW, or am I wrong in saying that they had something else in the week after? Was it like an alien or something?
I don't remember that, but I know, I mean, you had the zombie, and then Kevin Thorne had the vampire gimmick on ECW. Right. So it's just like, you can tell that this was very much a WWE-produced ECW. And just think about how it really ended. I mean, it ended, but, you know, Christian had a run with the ECW title.
Right.
And Vince McMahon came out and said, that's it, you know, ECW's over. But the final nail in the coffin, December to December was the, you know, them hammering the nail in. The final nail was Vince McMahon being the ECW champion wearing that ridiculous do-rag because he had had his head shaved.
And dropping the N-word on live TV.
And it was just like, okay, we know now that ECW is something that Vince McMahon himself just does not give a shit about.
Right.
So why should we? And really, when you look back, there was nothing good that came out of it except maybe CM Punk.
I think that would be the one bright spot, to be honest with you. Right. Oh, and Kelly.
Yeah.
But it kind of went, it's where some people went to die, right? I mean, Big Show left for a while. Heyman left for a while. RVD left after that. You know, and then it did launch some careers. You did get to see Mark Henry as a champion, Christian as a champion. Jack Swagger, Sheamus got their starts in ECW. Zack Ryder got their starts in ECW. Kofi Kingston.
Chavo Guerrero was ECW champ for a little while.
Right, so was Kane.
CM Punk too. He did eventually get the title.
John Morrison would be the champion for a while. You know, so ECW was not without its flaws, but it also set up some future stars.
Right.
Right. You know, so you got to give it credit where credit is due. I totally forgot that Armando Alejandro Estrada was an authority figure on ECW for a while.
He was the general manager.
He was. Wow, that's wow. And then you had Extreme Exposé. The Dirt Sheets started there. There was a lot, man. I mean, things there. There's stuff to take away from ECW.
So maybe more came out of it than I thought, but it will still always have the stigma of being a failure.
It's always going to be WWE's version of ECW, not the ECW that we knew and loved from the 90s, right? From the Attitude Era. I call that era the Attitude Era because that's where everything was more a little bit more. I don't want to use the word extreme again, but you know what I mean by that. You know, famously, ECW used to be on the MSG network in New York at 1 a.m. on Saturday nights. So we would like stay up late to watch the ECW show until they got their TV show on Spike or what was then TNN. Yeah. It's pretty amazing, right? That people still had a following. This was early days for us too. Like we were younger. It was early days for us of like, you know, tape trading. You know, we would go to these shows at, they used to be, and our Staten Island people would know this, a place called Sports Fest, which was like an inflatable bubble where they would have these wrestling events. And we met guys like Too Cold Scorpio, Jimmy Snuka, Jimmy Snuka Jr., his son. But they would also have these great tapes that we would, you know, get a couple, maybe make copies and like exchange with each other. I would have like one of my dad's friends who would get every single ECW pay-per-view. He would record it for me and give me the tape and I would watch it after the fact.
The Dudley started that infamous riot at Sports Fest. And right. ECW show.
Right. They almost got in trouble. Right. I don't think anybody ended up getting arrested.
I don't think so, but they did cause a riot.
Right. So it was bad. I mean, listen, that's the Dudleys for you, right? The full heel mode there. But I mean, yeah, it's going to be viewed ECW as a failure, although it did launch many a career. I think there is a whole brief episode dedicated to ECW on the WWE Network. If I think it might be an Untold, I might be wrong. But yeah, let's put a bow on this, man. It really, watching this match brought my spirits down. Terrible, terrible match. What a terrible match it was. I'm going to go watch something good now. I'm going to go watch NXT. Get some perks.
For my final point on it, it should be proof that for those who want to go backwards, you can't. You can't relive something. You can't rehash something. You can't bring something back and make it new again. It just doesn't work because it'll never capture the magic that it originally had.
You know, dude, that is a great point to end off of. And I think that's an awesome point because so many times do we hear how how WWE, in order to be successful, needs to go back to the Attitude Era. And I could not disagree more with people. Yeah. Attitude Era was great, but it won't work this time around. It needs to be new. It needs to be innovative. Because if they brought back the Attitude Era, after about a month or so, you'd complain that it's the same old shit. So that's a great way to put a bow in this episode. You can't always live in the past. It's time to move forward. Let's get creative. And we can still be edgy. We can still have edgier content, right? But in the right way and doing something different and pushing new stars. That remains to be seen. But all right, going to end on that point. And let's wrap things up. As usual, thanks to everybody who's been listening. Thanks to everybody who's been downloading. You can find us where you find all of your wrestling podcasts. But go to us first because we're more important. All right, you want to leave us that 5-star rating? You want to leave us a great review? You want to make us more prevalent in that search material? Leave us questions, comments, concerns at WrestlingGuysPC on Twitter, at FPPShow. On Twitter, Fans Perspective Podcast. What do you got covering this week, Chris?
Well, we were delayed in our recording our last episode, so we still have our Black History Month cinema. Let me rephrase that. We are going to be profiling Black cinema for Black History Month. We still have that coming, so stay tuned.
Absolutely. That's great. That's great. Great episode that's down the pike coming your way. Let us know. How do you feel about this December to December Extreme Elimination Chamber? How do you feel about the 2002 Elimination Chamber? How do you feel about this Sunday? Again, we'll be there. We'll be watching the show. Not there physically, but there in spirit. I'll be tweeting along. Let us know again at Wrestling Guys PC at FPP Show. And with that being said, this has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. We can talk about wrestling and drink some virtual beers. We're just about all out of virtual beers. We'll get the virtual clink to sign off.